why Indian law are so complicated, because everything that Indian people do, more or less, has to be regulated by some outside people, whether it's the Congress, or whether it's the Bureau of Indian Affairs, or whoever.
Not to interfere with the, not this election, but the next election, hopefully, your will have a representative in Congress. They've had a senior senator's aide down there now for some years. It's my son-in-law's brother. And he was narrowly defeated in Congress, that is in Mexico, last election, so he's going to try it one more time. But he has gained an awful lot of support, and hopefully they're going to have some representation in Congress at the next election. 4 years from now, or 2 years from now. Yeah, that's going to help. But it's going to take more than one. For the more than one individual to do away with all of the manipulating, yes, through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, because this is what it's all about. They have a lot of people, token representation, and it is good to have a congressman or a senator or someone like that. It's good to have people out there lobbying, but that's a token thing to the down to earth, the nitty gritty, if you may. When you deal with a problem that is 200 years old, you can't really truthfully put one person or two people in office and expect for it nullified, or that's going to stop right there, and you're going to reverse the thing.
Right.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
That's right.
Okay, someone else. Anyone?
You were talking about your 125 acres. How is it actually on the book? Is it actually these things in the reservation? Is it as recorded at the courthouse?
I don't know if that is recorded at all.
Couldn't you make it be recorded?
Yeah, but I would want to record it. I tell you, the only place that I know that is recorded is in Washington, the Census Bureau. I did have it recorded there with a footnote that this is not the original boundary. And then I put also in that footnote what the reservation consisted of, as far as what I have seen in the records.
Has the current chief done anything about that 27 acres they took just recently? I mean, is he going to try to fight that in any way? Just
he was involved with the I don't know exactly. I think putting the deed together, so I understand.
I know.
When I stepped down after my last tenure, 7-7, I never really went for councilman. All I was just a spokesman. And I didn't really have that much sass, so I talked to the council. They seemed to have gone along with what the chief was doing. And I guess I listened. I sat at that particular meeting, and I listened to what he said. And what he said sounded fairly good to me. If they were going to make that 27 acres, which was already a reservation, as far as I was concerned, that's what I said at the meeting. But if they were going to make it a part of the reservation, tax exempt, and that is the only way it could be a part of the reservation. It's a world of difference between a part of the reservation and the reservation owning something, you see.
But they tried to get it tax exempt, right?
I don't know who tried to get it tax exempt.
Oh, okay.
Now, we were told that the Commonwealth Attorney, which was John Paul Causey, was going to get it tax exempt. But John Paul Causey is saying now that it was left to the tribe to do it. In other words, people are backing up. They're saying, I didn't have any part in it. So, you know, where do we go from here? It's the only thing I know we can go from here, because we have to go back to the basic. That should not have been indeed made in the first place. What should have happened if the Chesapeake Corporation wanted to establish their boundary? They had that privilege. They had the privilege to establish a boundary around the reservation, but they had no right, according to a Congressional Act of 1790, to establish a boundary for the reservation, and that's what they did.
It sounds as if even the Commonwealth of Virginia was not involved, much less the federal Congress.
It was not.
Well, you got a law case here.
They were all the way down the line. What kind of thing? The wording in the contract deed is that they were making a present to the tribe. See? But how can you make a present to the tribe of something when you're talking about a stationary thing when you don't know where the boundary is? You know what I'm saying? You know, the reservation is already here. In my lifetime, that was the boundary that I knew about, or that was established before my time. But what the act did they come across here? And then they went back from here to here. And that's where your 27 acres come in. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, so they had their right to do that?
No, of course not, because what they did, they crossed on the reservation and had their severe line. I made this point. I suppose they decide they want to come across another 25 or 50 acres, come to the middle of the reservation, and come to my front yard. And then they would give, let's say, instead of 27, they would give 57 acres or 70 acres to make it look bigger and better.
If they do it this time, can't they do it again, make another 27 acres?
They would have to go from another point, because what they're saying is this is the recorded, that's recorded the boundary now. See, there was no recorded boundary except on the side that they had, and it was not a closed deed. In other words, in the state of Virginia, you have to have a complete closed deed all the way around. Most of those until recent years left an open deed. In other words, they would measure from one point to another. But when you got, let's say if it was a square or rectangle, whatever you want to say it was, they would measure and foot an inch on here, on this side, they would put more or less. And then they would write your deed so many acres. Changing that boundary, see? And that's the way all of them did in years past, but they don't do that anymore. They say it's illegal, modern day, because so much land was taken from people. You take a person that's fairly wealthy, and they come in on someone that don't really have the money to go into court and fight it, or to hire a surveyor to survey the property properly like it should. They can lose everything they have. That's why the first case I saw of that is right here in Weed County. So a friend of mine that would run the sawmill came. I was dealing gloves and lumber and stuff at the time. He came over and got me. He said, "I will show you some of it." He said, "Got time to ride with me?" I said, "Sure, I'll go with you." So he took me all over here, and this old black man had lived up north. When he left for me, he was just a youngster. And he did pretty well for himself. And he paid his taxes. He come down here often. And he took automobile license plates. And where the area of land that his father had owned and left it in, he had mailed automobile license plates all around it. No way in the world you could miss seeing the line. Automobile license plates about this high, all the way around the old place. And another well-to-do man lived in this area, bought the property of Jason, and he found that that place had an open deed, open plan. And he kept moving over until he took just about all of that land saved up some money, and he'd come back, and he wanted to build himself a home. And it was beautiful pine timber, trees like that, original stuff. And he put a sawmill down in the bottom. Men started to work inside of the mountain that he hadn't paid off. This gentleman come down and stopped him. He said, "Oh, wait a minute, you can't do that. You own my property." And that man went to court. And the only way that he beat the case, because the gentleman that had moved in had hired surveyors that were certified, and each time that they surveyed, they closed everything in. Man had something to stand on and to win his case because he had moved away and he wasn't there and he wasn't notified when it was being surveyed. He had received that he had paid taxes on X plus acres of land. People in the community knew where the boundary was and they all went to court and stood a point and they made him move his mind back. But that's what can happen to a person. It's a terrible thing, but it's a terrible thing. And I guess that's why so many Indian people, so many people in general, I mean, you get out of here anytime, and there's nothing to see people having surveyors to, you know, to survey days and days and days. They're trying to protect what they own, and someone else is trying to get a little bit more of what they own, and they know it's by and more this kind of stuff being made today. It's not going to get any larger.
My family's going through that right now in Hampton.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing when you stop to think about how the laws were in times past. And we said that we're trying to do better today. We're trying to make better laws to protect our people today. It has always been, and it always will be, as long as human beings, because we're prone for mistakes. None of us are going to be perfect. And one of the questions that has been asked, and you people are not going to ask that question today, I don't think you will, is how much animosity do I have toward the people that live around and do these kinds of things? I don't have any at all. I don't think Indian people to that extent have that kind of animosity that get out, you know, and do some of the things that it has been portrayed in times past. I do think they have enough guts and gumption to pull together to fight in court, to take the system, to take the majority system and make it work both ways. I think that is the key. I think that is one of the things that we need to do here, is to use the system, go to court. And it costs money. It costs money, it's true. And I think that is the problem. That is the hang-up with most Indian people. They just don't have the money to fight these long, drawn-out cases. I talked with an Indian chief three years ago out west, that his grandfather entered a case, a suit against a company or incorporation that started a waterworks, selling water, pumping water off the reservation and selling it to where he could and would. And it got larger and larger and larger until it began to take away the amount of water that, according to Congress, was allotted to the Indian people on the reservation. That case was still in court. So that gives some general idea now. This young man, he was probably in his late 30s, early 40s. And he said that he hoped that it would clear up in his lifetime, but he wasn't sure. Now, that is one case first time that I really got involved with any kind of water rights was 1970, probably 71, Santa Fe. Money. not available. And all, most of these areas that Indian peoples have it in abundance. I think in fight cases, that's a long drawn up case, like the one I mentioned about the water right case that has gone on for 3 generations.
NOF take care of that kind of thing?
NOF will go as far as they are financially strong enough, providing the case that they accept modern day, when I say modern day, I'm talking about today, or a crucial case, and it involves a tribe. Made a gift of $50,000 to North at one time.
mind that that's only one gift that they made. But they have made a number of gifts. But this is the last one that I remember, or the last one that I has been advised of. $50,000 that they gave. And that, just a drop in the bucket. That budget is a little over $2 million.
They're really prospering now that they got the land back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Knox helped them get the land back, and it's got the economic base up, so now they've got a regular business and corporation going. So
yeah,
they can start regularly.
They, in fact, the state holding them up, you know. At first, when they were fighting for it, they were, you know, they were nobody, they were bad people. But now that they are showing what they can do, financially strong, and they are just steady going, you know. I mean, they are the best people in the state today. But they own their own bank. They own at least three major corporations. All of our people are working. That is, that are in the job market. All of them are working. They are making fair wages. Now, federal status is not a tax-exempt status, such as some of the less federally recognized tribes. They do have federal recognition now, and they pay a great amount of taxes to the state. Thank you.
itself to go as for history, as far as that's concerned. But all we needed was actual documents there. If we go to court, this is what we can present. Okay? He says, no, we don't want to do it. We don't want to stir up nobody. You're going to get in trouble if you do it. And then, 7, 8 years later, you know, 6 years later, reminded him of Monkey, Morton Langston was the councilman at the time, and I believe he was in Washington. I met him in Washington, and I told him, I said, Morton, I said, I know you people have been fighting a long time trying to do something about the railroad. He says, if you want to do something about the railroad, I'll introduce you to a lawyer here that will take the case. Graham Bell was there. He was working for us at the time.
On the reservation
not pay for tags or like...
We pay for state license. We don't pay for that title and tag.
Oh, okay.
2%. Yeah. Two, whatever it's going to be. And that, you know, that's a big say, that's a plus for us, because it adds up to a few $100 if you buy a new car today. And I don't think, the way I feel about it, this is my personal feeling, I'm not so much concerned about how much money we are saving. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about whether it's legal, whether it's right, according to law. If it's a dollar, if it's a penny, if it's $1,000, it doesn't matter. I mean, in that respect. I know a penny is more than a dollar, and a dollar is not as much as $1,000. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that if it's mine, and it belongs to me, I should have it. Simple as that.
Also, they make you pay a penny a day, they'll make you pay a dollar tomorrow, and $1,000 a day.
That's the whole total thing.
Tribe are getting college educations and coming back to help out, especially educated ones.
It's a number of young people that are being educated. I don't really know how many are really thinking about the service that could be rendered to the tribe as a whole. I think one of the things that a lot of young Indian people, and I did not mention this a little bit ago when I talked about the lawyers, how many lawyers there were at one point in time, early 70s, how many lawyers it is today. A lot of lawyers, the Indian lawyers that we have today, will not work for the Native American Rights Fund for the simple reason NAR cannot pay them that X plus thousands of dollars. They are on a salary, and they work their butts off, and they only get that amount of money, and a lot of times they don't hardly have enough money to pay them, you know. You got to think about where the next paycheck is coming from. Down the road, whatever I put together for retirement, that kind of thing, we don't have the kind of retirement programs like possibly some other people might have, larger corporations like you just be. It's a lot of things that you have to look at, but then you think about young Indian people, there's a lot of young Indian people that go to school and they will get that degree just to do some of these things. And they don't care about the thing. I, executive, when we first opened the Native American Rights Funds, we had a Caucasian director, he was a lawyer once. He's a really good guy. You know, we gave him a year. 1971, make a guess. Run a business, get it off the ground. $18,000 a year. Dedicated person. Dedicated science. Now they get, I don't know what. Now, that $18,000 a year, travel per diem, all that kind of stuff, that came in over and above. He didn't have to pay for that. But his housing and all those other things, he had to take care of his salary.
Which is basically changed.
In fact, all of our lawyers are salary. But the minimum wages, all of us get minimum wages. You know, compared to good lawyers such as they are.
Any other questions anybody wants to ask?
If you go in cold, and when I say cold, you may have been practicing law for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. But if you don't know anything about Indian law, we don't just send you out there and let you go. You go in and you try and, under some of the older lawyers that have been in, you know, cases, you work with that lawyer, or, you know, maybe a couple of them in cases that you get to know how to handle, know how to look for certain things.
Yeah.
should be so obvious. This was interference with land without Congress taking any notice at all. We're really very few recent years. That just... I know, it surprises the daylights out of me. But I didn't know that some of the fellows like Mike who lived on the reservation and were employed elsewhere were paying stamp tax. I misunderstood that all along, I guess.
Yes.
When I came to work, first came to work here, practically everybody was a wood procurer.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that was the difference.
They were working from the reservation, see?
Uh-huh, yeah. So I took that as a general rule, so that even when somebody went to work off, like Chippy Langston, who used to work up at the B-Law, I assumed that he also would be exempt. But his employer was in West Point.
Yeah.
I just didn't think to question it back then. That's because I didn't do a follow-up.
Well,
aware I'm no expert.
Well,
I don't know.
When anyone gets perfect,
we should all get
perfect.
No, if we're perfect, we should go advise the president. That's what we should do. Because he needs it. He needs it. Teach him dancing?
No, just
it's just something to
just something display. Years and years and years.
Yeah.
Pretty well done. Kids come in and they wham on them.
That's the beat on it, yeah.
You put a new head in it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
One of the style of the original.
Yeah, they've got one similar out of Jamestown, but it's a real stump, and I look at that beat and think, I don't think I quite believe this. Myself. So it's not even a part of the archive. Well, I guess I ought to take my pictures and then take them off to... Yeah, I recognize that one immediately. Yeah, the artist is still active, coming up right here.
No, since he retired a year or so ago, he's not as active as he was getting up here. Well, I think he pretty well, you know, did most of the work that he wanted to do.
Got all his Ocracoke ears down.
Okay.
That was good. He actually my mom spent World War II at Oak Grove. Just when they were newly married, he was on the Navy base down there. And they lived out in the community. They didn't stick with Navy people. They wouldn't meet the folks. And he'd go duck hunting with them and all. But I got him to write up all that time. They were down there for 2.5 years. I spent my first 6 months there. And got it all on paper before he went. And that was good. And a lot of Old Hampton in the 1920s. That was what he started doing when he slowed down a bit after turning 65. And I'm glad I bumped him as much as I did.
Tom, you know that?
Yes.